Teachers in the Tiny Chairs is a podcast about all things early childhood teaching. Launched in 2020, Teachers in the Tiny Chairs began as a resource for teachers beginning the 2020-21 school year in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic and all of the uncertainty that brought for early childhood classrooms. I'm Dr. Christine Lippard, and each episode I interview researchers, classroom teachers, and other early childhood practitioners on a specific early childhood education topic, intended to provide research background, practical ideas, and cheering on from a distance. Teachers in the Tiny Chairs is the long-distance mentoring your teacher prep faculty wish they could provide. Today we're talking science and a little bit of engineering. This is probably an area of early childhood teaching that I have grown in skill and in passion the most in the past several years. And so I was so excited to talk to Dr. Christina Tank and retired early childhood educator Marcia about their experiences. I think you will be surprised how in sync they were with their perspectives. So first up, Dr. Christina Tank.
So I am Christina Tank. I am associate professor in the School of Education, specifically looking at science education at Iowa State University. My degree, I had a PhD in science education, curriculum instruction.
And before that, did you teach in the K-12 classroom?
I did. Yep. So I was a fifth grade teacher for 4 years in a district kind of just out of the Twin Cities area, or in the Twin Cities area, just outside Minneapolis.
What gets you excited about science and engineering with children?
Well, if you've ever been in a classroom or interacted with children of any age, they love science and engineering. So I think being a classroom teacher, that was the part that got pushed out a lot. So in this accountability world, even though I was in fifth grade, you know, it was always science at the end of the day or not seeing it. And that was kind of before engineering, although there were, you know, little bits of engineering within some of the sciences. And so, you know, for me, that was all kids love science and engineering. I might be biased, but, you know, I think they just, you know, when you see them, like, they're just interested in the world around them. And that's especially so much of our world is designed, right? It's science and engineering.
Retired early childhood educator Marcia shares her experience and what gets her excited about science.
Hi, I'm Marcia Swanson, and I'm a retired early childhood educator. I've had nearly 50 years of experience in early childhood, all kinds of things from being a preschool teacher to a childcare administrator and a regional director, founder and program coordinator and professor of a community college early childhood program, a consultant with other colleges in multiple states for improvement of their early childhood programs, and a founding member of a group in Northwest Iowa called Nature Connections. And their mission was to provide nature-focused professional development for early childhood staff and to advocate for outdoor experiences for all ages of children.
What gets you excited about science with children?
Well, I think science is all around us in our daily lives. When we think about a classroom, we always talk about the importance of the environment as being a teacher also. But I think that's just true in our home life, in our everyday life, that the environment is one of the most important teachers. And many of the things that we do in our everyday lives, whether it's as adults or our children, include science components. So I think science is in our life all the time. Cooking, cleaning, laundry, bathing, being on the computer, using technology, being outdoors, gardening, walking, biking, all those things. And so I think for children with science, we need to just really notice their sense of wonder in all of these processes and encourage their inquiry and their investigation and help them find sources of information to answer their questions and help them solve problems and predict. And really, to me, that is science.
I think it's so true that they notice so much about what's going on around them, and my toddler got excited about the moon. I mean, before she was 2 years old, she got super excited about the moon. We're not sure where it came from. And so she would tell us moon, like before she could say the word moon, she would say moo, moo, and she would point at it. Like she was so excited about the moon. And so she still gets excited and she will tell you if it's a half moon or a full moon. We've talked about crescent moon, you know, some of those she doesn't quite get, but some of them she does. And I think you're saying, when you're saying encouraging their sense of wonder, you know, I can think of the days where she was toddling around, it was time to leave for childcare, and she was asking where the moon was. And I was like, just get in your car seat, you know, like we have to go. But I think it's a good reminder to us to sort of slow down because they are noticing things all the time. It's how their brains are wired. Christy Tank, who I will also or have interviewed for this podcast and who was a part of Nature Connections at one point as a participant, talks about that her oldest son was just so into leaves. And I remember this about him, like when he was at the lab school, it would take him 20 minutes to get to the car because he was picking up all the leaves, you know, and he didn't need a lesson on him. He just needed time to explore him. So that's a great reminder.
I'm still that way, you know, in fall, every fall I have to pick up some leaves and put them between the catalog pages and press them. And, you know, I love them.
What makes for good science education?
Well, I think the science education has to be really relevant. And so it needs to connect to the child's age or stage of development, of course, be developmentally appropriate, but also to whatever is their present world. So you just mentioned your daughter at age 2 being interested in the moon. Well, she could see the moon. So that was part of her present world. And another way to think about it is that wherever a child can go, whether they're walking or driving with their family, that is what their world is. And so another term for that is the distance from self. So how far it is from where they are. And so to talk about something really abstract, like another country that they haven't experienced or can't relate to, is not good use of your time or theirs. And it's just not relevant to them at all. So things like maybe an experiment demonstrating how a volcano works is really kind of meaningless when you think about it in that term, unless they have been on a vacation where they have seen a volcano. But if you're going to do that with a group of children, you really need to work hard to bring that down to be relevant to them.
Volcano example made me think of that, especially for very young children, they have to be able to observe the phenomena. So sometimes I hear students say, well, if we put the toys in the classroom that have the button they push and then it makes a noise, the battery powered toys, they're learning cause and effect. And I think, well, actually they're not learning cause and effect, at least not in a meaningful way, because they can't see it. When they build a block tower and they push it over, you know, or they run into it and the blocks fall over, then they see cause and effect. Or when they, you know, that very first game they like to play where they start to drop the sippy cup off of the side of the high chair.
Yes, yes.
And it always goes down. And then they wait to see if somebody picks it up. That's an experiment that they can see what's unfolding. But when we have those things that they don't see how they unfold, then I think that also is really distant from them. You know, if they have to understand some abstract concept that they don't see happen.
Back to Dr. Tank.
Well, what would you say makes for good science education, especially thinking about like that preschool through third grade piece?
It's really the hands-on and having it come from the students and what the students are interested in. And so I think for good science education, it's engaging students with things that are around them. So as you get younger, right, it's things that they can physically see. As they get a little bit older into second and third, they can be remembering and building on some of the things they know. Not that the younger ones can't, but really thinking about, right, if I'm outside on a snowy day and I'm a preschooler, right, and I have a big puddle of water and I'm throwing my snow into the water and it's making slush, right? And it's just that experience is great, right? And then you just start to bring in some of the words because they want to know why. They might not know or might not have some of those, you know, experiences or things to build on or words to put with that, but they've seen it and they're interested and they're not thinking about it. So just helping think about how you bring that in, right? And that could be out on the playground, right? Why is this spot all of a sudden wet, right? Or why is this spot still snowy? Why is this one icy? Oh, look, you know, like ice skating rink, helping them see why, right? Why wasn't it like that yesterday? Why is it today? So just helping answer some of those questions that are already there. And so I think just bringing in the science for that for the students to make it relevant to them, make it something they can build on later. So when they get into kind of more formal content in some ways, right, then they can build on those experiences and some of those things they know, right? And they have the questions to ask, they have the some of the practices of being a scientist or being an engineer. And so I think it's really highlighting some of those pieces that's really important for students and just getting them excited about it.
What you're talking about what is relevant and what is hands-on and children's inquiry is really important. And then it so naturally leads you into integrated curriculum also of, well, let's read about that. Or, oh, there's a story, the snowy day we could read. Or let's try to write this down. Or let's measure how tall the snow is. So it integrates so nicely with everything else. So you also have an emphasis in engineering. How would you say engineering differs from science with young children? And what does good engineering look like?
So I don't, this might be your next question, but I didn't actually start as an engineer. So I don't have the background in engineering. When I was in graduate school, I was working under an engineering education professor. And at the same time, some of the standards, engineering was being put into some of the standards. So since my focus is on elementary and early childhood, right, the standards kind of play into what happens in different formal classrooms. It actually even bleeds into other areas when you think of informal or other settings. So kind of through that piece, I really started to be interested in engineering. And then there's this part of, so right now they're combined in science. And so just helping to kind of think about those two differently. Because there are some overlaps, but there's also some distinguishing pieces to it. Engineering is really more focused on kind of the designing and the designed world and things that are human made versus science, which is really looking at natural phenomena and things that are kind of in the natural world. I was going to say in our world, but so much of our world is designed, you know, and so it's really the natural world. So thinking about natural sciences, so kind of the life science, the earth, space science, physical science, those questions and the things students do in that is really getting at the why. And so, you know, why does this happen? Why does this look like that? And so versus the engineering piece, which is looking at some, how do I make this better? Or how do I solve this? Or, you know, so it's really focused more on problems versus questions. I mean, it's still questions in the sense that I need to ask questions to solve my problems, but just the way that engineering is approached is different. And so you're solving an answer, well, you're answering different questions.
Demonstrating to the children and encouraging their inquisitiveness by using open-ended questions. And those that require more than a single word to answer, like yes or no, it's got to be more than that. So when we were doing this professional development with the project approach, that was emphasized a lot. And a simple way to think about it that was given to us was those questions that begin with what or how or why. And then once you got an answer, the child asked that kind of a question or was talking about it in response to a question that you initiated. If you really listen to them, then oftentimes you can ask further questions and that broadens their understanding and makes them think a little bit deeper.
So your last position emphasized nature-based projects. So tell us more about that.
I was involved in a group of early childhood professionals who all felt that children did not have enough experiences in nature and that teachers could benefit by having some support in professional development in that area. So this group of volunteers formed a group called Nature Connections, and it was in collaboration and facilitated with Iowa Lakeside Laboratory in Northwest Iowa at Okoboji. And the Iowa Lakeside Laboratory is a Regents institution. And so all three of our Regents universities are involved and supportive of Iowa Lakeside Laboratory. So we had done some, we started out by doing some one-day workshops and conferences, and we did that for a few years, bringing in specialized speakers and things. And it proved to us what we already knew before we did it, that those one-shot experiences don't really change a whole lot of actual behavior by the teachers, although they did enjoy it. And you know, I had really good feedback about how wonderful it was to be outside and experiencing all these things. And through that, we also discovered then that we had many teachers who had not had experiences in nature themselves growing up. And so we needed to help them not only know about how to share nature with children in their classrooms, but they, as an adult, needed to feel comfortable.
I thought this was a really interesting point, and one I want to consider as I work with pre-service teachers. Maybe more important than focusing on the pedagogy of how they help children learn outside, maybe we just need to go outside and have a positive experience.
And so we had, as I mentioned, four cohorts, and each cohort had approximately 6 to 8 communities that were involved in that cohort. And they committed to a 3-year training period. So they had 4 days of training the first year and learned the basics. And during that year, they were required to do 2 projects with their group of children that were nature-based. And then the second year, they had 2 days of training on deepening project work. And again, were asked to do 1 or 2 nature-based projects. And then the third year was really got into more deepening of the work. It ended up being a very, very exciting project to be a part of. And the feedback from the teachers was awesome. The challenges were, how do I fit this in with everything else that I'm required to do? But the teachers also were amazed at how well they found that a nature-based project could meet so many of the early childhood standards.
And I'm glad you said that, because when you, and I hear this too, where they say, well, how are we going to fit that in? And I think that sometimes we get so segmented in our brain of like, I have to fit math and I have to fit literacy and we have to do our social emotional curriculum. And I'm like, science and social studies weave well with all of those. So I realize that's easy for me to say from my position, but I'm glad that you brought up that juxtaposition of they have a really hard time seeing how they'll fit it in, and they're, you know, and they're impressed by the amount of content and learning, and thus the number of standards they can address there also.
Yeah, and that's what they found. Every curricular area was included in their projects.
So your training likely didn't include science and engineering for infants and toddlers. Maybe not even preschoolers, but you have lived the infant, toddler, pre-K years at home. So in that, what have you noticed about that really early science and engineering from your own kids?
Yeah, so I did. Like I said, I was a 5th grade teacher. And then, you know, as I, through my training, I did some other things, right? And then as I got into my research world and thinking about that, I teach the elementary and the early childhood, I've really tried to learn the early childhood world, but the at home with my own kids has been, I always laugh because my oldest was the one who would be outside of his daycare, and he'd be looking at everything and asking a million questions, and everyone would laugh because they'd be like, oh, there's Christy and her son out exploring science again, you know, because she's the science educator, which is always really funny. But he had so many questions, so I have 2 boys. One is now in 1st grade, and then one is a preschooler. And the questions they come up with is amazing. I mean, even before they can talk, it's always like, why? What happened? Right? And those questions lead perfectly. And usually they're about science things, right? So, I mean, I guess for me, just thinking about all these things that they're noticing is great. Because then I can also think about, right, of course, I'm always the researcher and teacher, right? So I'm thinking about, oh, so if they can already do this now, we should be doing this when they get to, you know, older grades. So just thinking about some of those pieces, it's just, again, it's that wonder and that excitement, right? So, oh, does this, oh, can we, and they always think of things that I don't think of. I try to be a step ahead of them, but I can't. And they're like, okay, so what happens if I, you know, can I use a fork, right? And inevitably the fork is now turned into like a launcher of Oobleck across my house. They're like, wow, it doesn't stick to the cabinets. Great.
We can't be, as a teacher, we can't be the person that knows everything. And I don't think we need to portray that.
I think the kids a disservice when we portray that we know everything, because just like we were talking about that sort of black box of how do things happen, we don't give them a picture for how you get from not knowing to knowing. if we just magically know everything. And so I think you're right that asking experts or looking it up in a book or now looking it up on YouTube or
sorts of
things. So you mentioned that you ran into a number of teachers who either didn't have experiences in nature or didn't have positive experiences in nature themselves. And, you know, I think we often jump to like the pedagogy of how do you do something or the strategies of how you do something. But I haven't thought about that. Actually, the first step is to have some positive experiences. And so now I'm going to think about that, you know, for even for my pre-service teachers, of how do we give them positive experiences? You know, we kind of know historically teachers have struggled with early science, so hopefully we're making inroads on that. But COVID seems to make it even harder. So it's difficult to share materials. You have to leave space. School sometimes is virtual or online now. So how might early science look different in the COVID context? And then how might nature be particularly helpful or relevant right now?
I think I'd like to start off by saying, wow, this is something, you know, that I didn't experience in all my years of work in early childhood. And so I don't have advice from experience, but in thinking about it, I think it's still important for the teacher to serve as a facilitator of the science learning. And so somehow posing something to develop children's interest, whether you're showing something on the computer, if you're teaching virtually, and then encouraging them to ask questions and guide them in how are we going to find out answers to these things. Rather than being that teacher that's the sage on the stage and has all those answers, somehow figuring out how you can continue to be the facilitator.
You know, I think one of the benefits that have come, if you can call it a benefit, is, you know, being outside. And being able to be outside and spend more time outside and being, you know, the recommendations that it's safer for some of them, you know, and so I think more kids are spending more time outside and getting to explore some of that piece. And even if they're not, because it's still hard to figure out all of the outside, like the safety precautions don't go away outside, but helping students to, okay, so now we're going to go on a walk, right? And then figure out how to do that safely. But then as you're walking around, you get to see, right? So we adopted a tree. Right. And so now we get to see all the changes in the tree. Right. And then we can go explore the tree. We can pick up sticks. We can pick up leaves. And those things are still things that are relevant to the kids that they see around them that they can do. And so the science, it might not be able to share materials in terms of what they can do with some hands-on experiments and stuff, but bringing in some of those other pieces or using some of the, you know, outside the nature, some of those pieces that are there, you can still do in this time. And then you can have students do, if they're virtual too, right? So have them go on a nature hunt and then come back and see the different things they've found. You know, I think you said this too, but science and engineering doesn't need to be scary. It's things that students do and our children, you know, anyone. But when you think about young children, right, they do science and engineering. So I think starting out just encouraging some students to think about those questions and ask those questions and explore some of those things. You have a big curriculum. You don't have to have big planned lessons. I think doing little pieces and just starting with some things that the students are interested in really goes a long way. And then once they're engaged in that, right, then it's trying to figure out, and this is the hard part as a new teacher, even as an older veteran teacher, are they engaged in the science and that's why it's messy and loud? Or are they off task? And I think that's one of the hard parts to look in, you know, in any pre-K third classroom, right? Okay, so these students look like they're playing with the materials, but is it because they have a flashlight? Now they wanna know what happens when the flashlight goes off the mirror, right? And we're studying light, so that's perfectly, right? But they're giggling, right? So is that what they're giggling about? Or is it, you know, and so I think just kind of trying to kind of tune into some of those things, knowing that it's going to be a little messy, you know, and being okay with the messy, I think is the hard part. But then figuring out how do you get them engaged? Because once you engage them, a lot of the management stuff that seems scary goes away because they're so engaged in what they're doing. And then it's more of like a hum of kids on task versus like, oh my God, do I need to put out that fire? What's going on over there? What's over there, right? For me, starting small with some of these things and building on what students do and know that it doesn't have to be a big, huge, scary science lesson where they're doing all these big experiments. It's just going outside and, you know, oh my God, do you see each snowflake's different, right? Once it's snowing, or just kind of building on some of the things, or a student, you know, comes in with all these questions about, right? Why can I see the moon? Great question. Let's look it up. Or, you know, I think bringing in books for kids, especially nonfiction, is really important because they can read and you can have some of those questions to go with some of those experiences to see what they're interested in is really important too. A lot of the nonfiction students are really interested in because it delivers that information in a kid-friendly way so that you don't have to try to explain something, right? Because then you think, okay, so now how do I explain X, Y, or Z in, you know, little kid words right. So they can get it, you know? And so I think that can help with some of them, you know, and you can just kind of share in some of the things they're already interested in. And that's great. You know, that's a great starting point. If everyone did that, I would be happy as a science educator.
Well, so for those listening to the podcast, Marcia, we met because we've kind of thrown together this online meetup group for our alumni.
I think
and
it's great.
And you have joined us, which has been wonderful, as we've had some, you know, first and second year teachers that are on the front lines right now. And I think that you are such an encouragement to them. And so I would just ask, is there anything that you would say or share with new teachers who are just starting out their career in this context?
Well, it's become evident from listening to those gals on the Zoom meetings that you've had, the importance of being flexible. And I would support that 100%. That, you know, just got to continue to be flexible to meet the changing demands that are coming from administration and trying to meet the criteria and do what's best for the children and parents and families that they're serving. And then also to reach out to colleagues when you get really stumped or a little bit discouraged, reach out to a colleague for ideas and support. And by colleagues, I don't mean just the people that are working with you and close to you. Think about your professors, or think about your extension office, or think about that naturalist, or think about any way you can connect with professional organizations that you belong to. And then realize that you are doing the best that you can with the knowledge that you have and the resources that you have. And don't beat up on yourself. And that ties right in with my last thought, and that is to take care of yourself. So often I think in a job that happens to be stressful for us at a certain period of time, we forget that. And we have to be careful not to shut out our family and our friends that are important to us. And just carve out some time for yourself away from your teaching responsibility. As a retiree, I will just say that I commend all the teachers that are working so hard and doing what they think is best.
Well, I want to say a special thanks to Marcia, who has been a very generous retiree in her encouragement of current teachers and of giving me her time for this podcast. And thank you to Dr. Tank for her insights as well. Teachers, we love you. We're here for you, even if it's only once a month right now. We hope that you are having a good semester, that your weather has been okay, and you're able to get out some to explore nature and science. This podcast has been recorded and edited by Dr. Christine Lippard, music by Jason Lippard.